glad you were able to make it, Peter. You're the new night caretaker from my prisoners. Let me show you around and give you the instructions you need in order to take care of them correctly. Now, if you'll take a look over here, you'll see that there are a whole bunch of pits in the ground, and each one is covered with a grate. Bars. To prevent my prisoners from escaping. But you see, Peter, it's almost impossible to escape. 'Cause every single pit has walls that are so steep it's almost impossible to crawl up those walls. But my prisoners, 'cause they are so hungry, every once in a while do crawl up the walls. You see over there, there's one who crawled up. Look at his hands sticking out above the grate. You see, we don't give them a lot to eat, and so, with the hope they might get a little bit more, they'll crawl to the top of the pit and stick their hand out of the grate and beg for food. You, down there! Why were you punished? Why were you put here? Tell us, come on!
Oh, Your Excellency, I was starving, hungry, my family had nothing to eat, my kids were crying, and you threw a big party in the park in town, and all the dignitaries from all the lands around were there, and I snuck up behind the bush, and I asked one of them for something to eat for my starving children, and...
That's exactly right, you see, Peter. He was abusing his right to eat, and so now he will die in this pit. Now let's take another one of these that we don't feed. Oh, right here, of course. This is my dear friend, the Jew, Aaron. Rabbi Aaron, to be correct. That's right, you see him, that pitiful soul down there, and he's got his wife there too. But I can't keep talking, you know, I have business to attend, so I will leave you now, Peter. And remember, cruelty is the best medicine. Bring me my horse, Peter.
Cruelty is the best medicine. Yeah, you could say that again. Well, here I am in this miserable job. At least it pays well. I don't know how I'm gonna survive this long with these people crying in the background. This is absolutely... What is that? Someone is singing in the middle of the night in one of these pits? Excuse me? Is that you I hear? Singing in one of those pits?
Yes, it's me. Why do you ask?
Well, I find it kind of strange that someone should be singing in these miserable holes in the ground. Why do you sing like that?
I sing because Hashem shows me mercy. Even in these horrible times, He shows me rachmanis.
What kind of mercy does your Hashem show to you that you are down deep in that pit? What's your name, anyway?
My name is Aaron.
Oh, you're the Aaron that the Duke didn't get a chance to tell me about, huh?
Yes, that's me.
Well, why are you in the bottom of that pit?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It's a long story.
And now here, Kindalach, you're going to hear a story of how the Koyach HaTumah did everything in its power to stop the Koyach HaKedusha. Kindalach, you have to realize that the Koyach HaTumah is very, very strong, and it will do anything it could to stop the Koyach HaKedusha from thriving. Our greatest tzaddikim in the history of Klal Yisrael went through tremendous battles against the Koyach HaTomeh. And here you will hear a story of a great tzaddik that barely beat the Koyach HaTomeh. And this is the tale.
About 3 years ago, I was farmer on the Duke's land. And every year I would take my crop to the marketplace and I would sell it. And then I would pay rent to the Duke, 100 gold pieces. One year, I took my crop to the marketplace, but the crop wasn't good and therefore it only sold for 50 gold pieces. And now I had to take that 50 and pay the Duke with it, but I still was short. I didn't have enough money to pay the rest of the rent, another 50. And so the Duke, when he heard this, the Duke said he didn't care whether or not I had any money to live on. He needed his money, and he said,
"What do you mean he didn't have the full 100 gold pieces? You go back to him now and you tell him that this year I'll let him get away with it, but next year I'll have to pay double the rent. No matter how much money he makes, he will give me, instead of 100 gold pieces, 200 gold pieces."
But next year, even though my crop was better, it still wasn't enough to pay the Duke, let alone feed myself and my wife. Instead of making 200 gold pieces, where I could pay the Duke and hopefully have a little bit left over for myself, I only made 150 gold pieces, and again, I didn't have enough money to pay the Duke.
This time is his last chance. If he doesn't have the money by the end of the year this time, he'll have to pay triple the price. But if he doesn't have triple the price, he should know that there's a pit waiting for him in my pet shop.
And of course, the next year, I did not make nearly enough to pay the Duke. And so one night, my wife and I were sleeping, and all of a sudden there was a banging at the door.
"Open up! We're here on behalf of the Duke. He orders you to pack up and come up to the castle immediately."
And as you know, the Duke's castle is so menacing. Going there alone is a punishment in it of itself. And so I came to the castle. And when I came into the Duke, I was shaking, I was so frightened. And the Duke looked at me and he said,
"Listen here, my dear Jewish friend, I gave you 3 chances. What do you expect from me? I need my money, I have to feed my family. My soldiers need food. I'm so terribly sorry, but I can't allow you to stay on my land and eat any of my food. I can't even afford to allow you to eat a blade of grass in the fields of my land, and therefore I'm going to have to lock you up in one of my pits, together with all of my other pets. I'm terribly sorry to break the news to you, but you and your wife will not be seen in the world of the living ever again. You will starve at the bottom of that pit."
And that is what I am doing here. This was not very long ago. It was last week, and I haven't had anything to eat. My wife and I are very weak.
"I don't understand something. How can you say that your Hashem has mercy on you if you're deep down in this horrible pit? What kind of mercy is that?"
"Well, I'll tell you. For many years, my wife and I didn't have any children. And right before the Duke put us into this pit, we found out that my wife is expecting a baby. So although we're deep in this pit, we are happy because we know that Hashem is looking after us."
And so, Kindlech, for a number of days, Peter would come on the night shift. And every time he came, he took a look down into Reb Aaron's pit, and there he was again, singing his tillim and very happy. And finally, after a couple of days, Peter bent down by the pit.
Rabbi Aaron, I'm getting quite impressed with you. To be so happy in such a miserable situation, I mean, I'm the night watchman, and I get miserable from being in this surrounding. How you keep such a great attitude to me is unbelievable. You must be a holy person.
Now come here. Come close. I want to tell you something. I see that you're very special. And therefore, from now on, I'm going to make sure that you don't perish in this pit. Late at night when nobody is watching and none of the other prisoners can hear anything, I will lower down on this rope bread and water. But you must promise to me, you must promise that you'll never tell anyone that I did this. Because if the Duke ever finds out, he will definitely kill me. Do you hear what I said? Yes, yes. I hear. Thank you so much. Now you see what I mean. Hashem is looking after me. He sent such a wonderful man to be the night watchman.
And so, Kindlech, that's how it was. Every single night, the night watchman would bring Reb Aaron bread and water. Weeks went by. Weeks turned into months. And then 6-7 months later, one evening the night watchman came with the bread and water, and as he's getting closer to Reb Aaron's pit, he notices that there is a glow, a shine, coming out of Reb Aaron's pit. He comes to the pit expecting probably fire on the bottom of the pit, but he takes a closer look, and he can't believe it. He hears the crying of a baby.
Reb Aaron, what's going on down there? How did that baby get there? I'll tell you. My wife, Baruch Hashem, Hashem had mercy, and we gave birth to a little baby boy. I know, but what is that shine? That shine is the boy. There's something special about him.
And yes, Kindlech, there was something very special about this boy. Reb Aaron waited 8 days, and because he knew that his wife was expecting a baby, he had brought along a knife, a special knife that they use for bris milah. And 8 days later, Kindlech, he gave the baby a bris milah, and he named the baby Shloime Ephraim. Not too long after this, the Duke called together all the dignitaries and fancy people from all over the land, and he was going to make a big party for them. And everybody came to his giant castle, and they were in the giant hall in the middle of the castle where the party was being held, and they had music and food, and all the goyim were fressing and zofing, and they were dancing around.
Ma, this is one fine party. I've never been to something so nice in all my life. Everything is so good here. For example, them taters right there. I'll have me some of them taters. What are you talking about? What are taters? That right over there, that's what we call taters. Those are not taters. There's El Kald, potatoes, not taters. It is disrespectful to the dish to call them taters. The wrong way to pronounce it, the right way is potatoes. Taters, totters, I don't care. Potatoes, they taste fantastic, and I'm going to have me some of them. And so the Scotsim over there, they were shikering and they were hulyaning and doing avedis.
And in one corner of the room was the Duke himself entertaining his guests.
You know, I can appreciate what everybody here is saying, that they have control of the people on their land. But I'd like to make a suggestion. You ask the people on my land if I have control over them or not. I have complete control. The terror that they have from the mere mention of my name is unbelievable, because they know if they don't behave, you know, we have a place for them. We have the pits. The pits, yeah, the most dreaded pits in the world.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I love that's just so evil. It's fantastic. What exactly do you do in those pits?
You need to understand something, and this is something I've said for a long time. A lot of people are born good and then they become evil. I'm not like that. I was born evil, and I'm very proud of it. I like to say cruelty is the best medicine. So let me tell you, I have a big, giant, fenced-in area with a very big wall. And in that area, there are pits. On top of every pit, there's a grate. And I call the victims of those pits, I call them my pets. I barely give them anything to eat. And then in one corner, I even have a section for my pets that don't eat at all. That's right, we starve them to death. Not long ago, well, happens to be the last victim was a man by the name of Aaron, a Jew. I threw him in there with his wife. He's probably dying down there. He probably died months ago. And people know about this, so they're afraid of me.
But Kindalik, right near the Duke, was standing the day watchman, who watched the pits during the day, and he had noticed that Reb Aaron was still alive after 6 months. He was marveling at it himself, and now he walked over to the Duke and he said, Your Excellency, that particular prisoner is still alive. And not just is he alive, he has a little baby with him down at the bottom of that pit.
What are you talking about? A baby at the bottom of the pit? Listen to me, my dear friend. I'm gonna go look at this myself, but I'm warning you right now that if he is indeed not alive, you're gonna end up in that pit. Do you understand me? Are you sure he's alive?
Well, he was alive today. This morning he was alive.
Go fetch me my horse. Aaron, is that you down there? Do I hear a baby crying? Oh, very interesting. Peter, go fetch me a rope.
Here you are, Your Excellency, a rope.
Now, Peter, get out of here. Go to the castle. And I'll tell you when you can come back here. Aaron, I want you to grab a hold of the rope together with your wife and bring up that baby. Now listen here. I don't know if you know or not, but I don't have any children. I'm gonna put you onto a horse together with your wife, and I want you to leave this country immediately. If I ever catch you on my lands, I will kill you, but you're leaving me that baby. And if I ever hear that you told someone that this baby is really yours, no place in the world will be safe for you. I will come after you and find you wherever you are and kill both you and your wife. Is that understood?
I guess so. Do I have a choice?
No, you don't have a choice. Now give me the baby. Here's a horse for you and a horse for your wife. I want this to be the last time that I ever see you in my entire life. If for some reason I'm visiting a different country and you hear that I'm coming, make sure that I don't see you, because I'll kill you for seeing you alone.
And so, Kindalik, that is exactly what happened. The Duke took the little baby, Shloime Ephraim. Nobody in the entire land knew that this baby was stolen. He brought the baby home as a newborn baby, and he didn't tell anybody. And a couple of months later, he made a big announcement, and he said that his wife just had a baby, and everybody came, and they gave presents to the baby, and everybody thought that this was actually the Duke's baby. And the little baby got older and older, and as it was growing up, it was very obvious that this was a very, very bright baby, very smart little boy. He looked beautiful too. Everybody admired him, whoever saw him. And the Duke was very careful to teach him. He got him the best teachers. They taught him mathematics, astronomy. They taught him poetry and literature. Everything that a prince, that a duke needs to know. The Duke taught all this to him, and the boy excelled. He was extremely bright. And the Duke gave him a name, gave him a goyish name, Philip. And now many years went by, and Philip's 6th birthday was coming up. And the Duke was very proud of him, and he wanted everybody in all the land to see how beautiful and bright his boy is. And so he made a big giant birthday party, and he invited everybody to come. And everybody was looking at the boy and introducing themselves, and he was so proud of him.
Yeah, that's my son, all right? He's just like me, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I'm so proud of him.
And he was showing off all the different things that the boy knew. Astronomy, mathematics, poetry, literature, and all kinds of other things that a prince needs to know. And as he's showing him off, one of the guests, someone from France, came over.
Your Majesty, I'm very impressed with this young man. This boy is quite learned in many different ways. He appreciates poetry, he appreciates the arts, he understands mathematics. But there's one thing in our country that really would be wonderful for this little boy, for the young man to learn.
And what's that? What hasn't he learned yet?
The boy has not learned how to play an instrument. If he would learn how to play an instrument, he will be very well-rounded.
So what do you suggest? Tell me.
I suggest that you send him back to France with me. We have the greatest teachers in the world. And we will teach him how to play some sort of instrument. Do you have any specific preference to which instrument you want him to play?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I always admired those people who played the harps. I always thought the music was absolutely enchanting.
Well, I'm sure we have plenty of teachers that can teach him how to play the harp. Just send him with me, and I will make sure he gets the best teacher.
And so Kindlech the Duke sent Philip to France. And there in Paris, he learned how to play the harp. And now Kindlech Philip became very attached to the harp. He loved it, and he loved its music. There is nothing he loved more than to play with his harp. And Kindlech Philip, rather Shlomo Ephraim, was getting now older and older. And every year, his father, the Duke, would teach him something new, educate him more. Finally, Kindlech, his 13th birthday was approaching. Now the Duke was telling one of his advisors,
"Up until now, I taught the boy everything he needs to know in terms of education, sports, etc., etc. But the real art that he needs to learn is swordsmanship. He's about old enough to start learning. Just needs another couple of months, 3, 4, and then we'll teach him swordsmanship."
And Kindlech, this was 6 months before Shlomo Ephraim's bar mitzvah. And as the months drew nearer and nearer, it was 2 months before his bar mitzvah. And the Duke is about ready to train him in the ways of swordsmanship. One night, Kindlech, Shlomo Ephraim had a dream, and in his dream, a man came to him and said to him,
"You are not Philip, my son. Your name is Shlomo Ephraim. You're not the son of the Duke. You're my son. Now quickly, get up and run away from the Duke's palace, from his castle, and run to the city of Prague, and there you will go to the Rav, the rabbi of Prague. He's waiting for you. Run away!" Philip got up in a cold sweat. The dream seemed so real, but he dismissed it. It was just a dream. But then again, the next week, the dream came back. But this time, what was even more intense, this man who called himself Aaron was even more demanding that Philip, Shlomo Ephraim, should run away. But again in the morning, he dismissed it as simply a dream. The 3rd week, the 4th week, every single time, it became more and more intense. 5th, 6th week,
The seventh week it was becoming so real that Shloime Ephraim would wake up in a cold sweat, but he still didn't tell anything to anyone. Finally, it was the week before his bar mitzvah, and this time it started getting really real. The man would come to him in his dream, and he would begin to yell at him. You're not listening to me! I'm telling you I'm your father! You're throwing away your life! You're not a goy, you're a yid! The next night it became even harsher, and the man started yelling at him and screaming. It was so real. It was like the man was in his room. In the middle of his sleep, he started to scream, oh, no, no, leave me alone, leave me alone! When he started screaming, the Duke heard him. He came running as fast as possible.
Philip, what's the matter? What's going on? What are you screaming for?
Oh, Father. Until now, I thought it was a dream. But there was someone in my room, and he was telling me his name is Aaron, and I'm not your son. I'm really his son.
What? There was a man in your room?
Yeah, he's been here for quite some time, and I always thought it was a dream, but tonight it was him. He was in my room, and he told me that I'm a Jew.
Oh, are you ridiculous? A Jew? Do you know where this man came from? Did he come in the door or through the window?
No. I just saw him standing next to me. I don't know where he came from.
Don't worry about it. I'll make sure it never happens again.
And the next morning, the Duke called together a couple of his guards and told them that one should stand downstairs in the castle courtyard next to the window where Shloime Ephraim slept. And the other one, he said that he should stand by the door of Shloime Ephraim's room. And the third guard was to stand on top of the roof and look around to see if this man, Aaron, would dare show his face again on the Duke's land.
But that night, once again, Shloime Ephraim had the dream, and the dream was as intense as ever. This time, the man Aaron came to him and actually grabbed him by the shirt and told him to run to the Maral Miprag, and tell him that you're my son and he will take care of you.
Again, the boy woke up in a cold sweat and started screaming, help, help! Father, there's someone here again! And the Duke jumped out of bed and came running as quickly as he could.
What happened? Tell me what happened!
The same man. He came back tonight.
Duke ran out of the room.
Did you see a man come in here through the door?
No, I didn't see anyone.
He ran to the man near the window.
Did you see anybody come in this door? Talk to me, answer me, yes or no?
The man on the rooftop also got that question. But everybody said they didn't see anybody.
I'm gonna show him.
And now it's 5 days before Shloime Ephraim's bar mitzvah. And again, he wakes up with the same dream and the Duke comes running. And again, he asks the man by the door, did you see anybody in? No, he didn't. The guard by the window didn't see anything. The man on the roof didn't see anything either. But now, the Duke was fuming.
You didn't see anybody, huh? Well, guess what? You'll never see anybody for the rest of your life. Because all three of you are gonna die tonight.
And the Duke gave orders, and all three guards were put to death, and now he put up another three guards. The following night again, the dream was becoming even more real. The man in the dream started screaming and hitting Shloime Ephraim, and again he started screaming and the Duke came running out. And he had those three guards killed as well. And now it's 2 nights before Shloime Ephraim's bar mitzvah. And the Duke decided that now he will sleep in Shloime Ephraim's room with his sword at the ready. And that's exactly what he did. That night when Shloime Ephraim went to sleep, there was a guard by the door, a guard on the roof, and a guard at the window. But to make himself feel even more comfortable, he put two guards at every one of those positions, and he himself, the Duke, went into Shloime Ephraim's room to sleep, his sword at the ready. And that night, both the Duke and Shloime Ephraim fell asleep. And in his dream, Shloime Ephraim once again saw the man approaching him.
I've told you, my son, too many times. It's almost your bar mitzvah. I can't rely on you. And in his dream, Kindalach, the man came over to Shloime Ephraim, and he picked him up, and he took him with his bare hands to the city of Prague, and he put him down on the stairs of the shul in Prague, and he told him in his dream, when you wake up, you will find yourself on the stairs of the shul in Prague. When the shamus of the Beis HaMedrash comes, you tell him to take you to Maharal. The Maharal will be waiting for you. The next morning, Kindalach, Shloime Ephraim woke up on the steps of the shul in Prague.
What's going on over here? What are you doing on the steps here first thing in the morning? It's barely light outside. And you're in your pajamas. You're not even wearing slippers. I don't believe this. What's your name?
My name is Philip.
Philip? What are you doing by the synagogue? You're not even Jewish.
I had a dream last night, and a man told me that I need to speak with the Maharal. You know who that is?
What do you mean, do I know who that is? He's the Rav of the city. Oh, no, you have to come immediately. I have to get your dress, put on a robe, some slippers. Come, my name is Gimple, and I am the shamish of the shul. Why don't you come with me? I'll, get your dress, and I'll take you to the Maharal, to the Rav. And he will talk to you, I guess.
And so, Kindlich, Reb Gimple took Shloime Ephraim to a nice old lady.
Mrs. Markowitz, what's your name, Markowitz or Greenberger?
Yai! They've been calling me so many different names. When I'm giving people to Essen, they're calling me Mrs. Markowitz. When I'm giving people what to wear, they're calling me Mrs. Greenberger. They're mixing up the yites, right?
Well, whether your name is Mrs. Markowitz or Mrs. Greenberger, hey, how about if I call you Mrs. Markberger? Okay, this young fellow over here, I found him on the shul steps. I don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, I kick on that pen eagle, eh? She doesn't even have no sleepers. Before we giving you what to wear, we have to give you what to eat. A bis lecho geschmackerapat kropkli.
But mommy, he's stolen his pajamas.
Forget the sleepers. Esmad up to SNFS. Keep my hair. I give you something to eat, then I give you something to wear.